Today, in recognition of one of the main themes of the High Holy Days of Judaism, I want to speak about this miracle of forgiveness. I suspect we have all been on the giving or receiving end of this miracle at one time or another in our lives. A few years ago, I was on the receiving end in what felt to me like a significant way. A dear friend whom I had lazily neglected to keep in touch with called to tell me some tragic news concerning her family. When I picked up the phone message and heard her say that she had some sad news that she wanted to tell me in person, that is, in person over the phone, I felt terribly guilty for not writing to her or staying connected with her for a long time. When we later spoke and I heard her sad news, I felt even worse for not getting in touch, for losing touch. When I apologized and asked her to forgive my neglect, she was gracious and genuine in her forgiveness. And so we talked, we cried together, we renewed our connection to each other through the sharing of her pain. And that miracle, the miracle of forgiveness, took place. It happens every day, though perhaps not often enough. To modern Unitarian Universalists, the word forgiveness, when it's used in a religious context, as it is during the Jewish High Holy Days, that word may conjure up gloomy ideas of sin, guilt, and punishment. Ideas most of us Unitarian Universalists have long abandoned. American Unitarianism built its foundation upon a critique of the Calvinistic idea that humans are depraved sinners in need of redemption. And Universalism rejected the wrathful, punishing Calvinistic God in favor of a loving God who grants salvation to all. Over 100 years after Universalism and Unitarianism were organized separately into full-fledged denominations, Thomas Starr King, your namesake in this church, who was a famous Unitarian minister who was raised a Universalist, summed up the difference in the two denominations. He said, "Universalists believe that God is too good to damn anyone. Unitarians believe that humans are too good to be damned." Because of this heritage, we, the heirs of these two traditions, tend to view humans as basically good and tend to reject religious notions of sin and guilt. We've thrown out the idea that we should feel like guilty wretches, stained with original sin and in need of redemption, in need of cosmic forgiveness. In our hymnal, we have included the traditional hymn, Amazing Grace, with its traditional wording, "Amazing grace, how sweet the sound that saved a wretch like me." But significantly, new wording is suggested in a footnote as an alternative, which substitutes soul for wretch. In one congregation I heard about from a choir director I worked with, one Unitarian Universalist man, she reported, couldn't contain himself during the singing of this song with the traditional wording. And so he yelled out, "I'm not a wretch. I am not a wretch." I would certainly agree with the prevailing Unitarian Universalist view about the basic goodness of the human being. We aren't wretches. But I think that this optimistic view by itself leaves out something else that is part of our humanness. Our shadow side, the tendency we also have to be selfish, hurtful, less than honest, consciously or unconsciously destructive, even downright mean at times. Sometimes we feel cranky and tired and we lash out in anger. Or we feel lazy and neglect to call a friend. Or we do far less for that important charity or social cause than we know we can. We feel hurt by someone and wish vengefully to return the pain. If we did not have such tendencies, forgiveness would be unnecessary. The process of forgiveness in human interaction is complex. People sometimes tend to use the word forgive a bit loosely. A woman arrives late for an appointment and breathlessly says, "I got caught in traffic. Please forgive me." Or a man accidentally spills his soup on someone's suit and asks forgiveness as he clumsily wipes away his mishap. Lewis Smedes, in his book, Forgive and Forget, makes a distinction between forgiving and excusing. We excuse each other many times a day for our little slights and mistakes, for the lateness, for the spill, for forgetting to stop and pick up milk. But true forgiveness comes after a much more serious offense. True forgiveness has a depth to it, and it can neither be rushed nor forced. Even doing a meditational practice won't necessarily get you all the way there, but it is a practice that you can use to move in that direction. An overly easy, cheap forgiveness can short-circuit the process of growth and reconciliation that forgiveness, true forgiveness, can offer us. And forgiveness that is grudgingly expressed because the offended believes he or she should forgive, or because the offended one will, by forgiving, feel superior to the offender, this is bogus. This is no forgiveness at all. There is an important step that must precede forgiveness, and that is acknowledging the hurt. This may seem easy, but it is not always. Some people carry around a belief that they are invulnerable to pain, and they have trouble acknowledging that they can even be hurt. Others are so super vulnerable that they deny they've been hurt and they submerge the pain, sometimes just in order to survive. Children who have been abused or molested may unconsciously go to great lengths to deny the pain of their experience by repressing the memory of the abuse, by falling into lifelong depression or drug and alcohol use, or even more rarely, by dissociating and splitting into multiple personalities. Even lesser wrongs may be denied and treated as if they never really hurt. We learn this kind of stoic stance on the playground as children when, after being insulted, we chant through our stifled tears, and you know the chant, "Sticks and stones may break my bones, but words can never hurt me." Sometimes names can never hurt me. Forgive and forget is a commonly used phrase, but to truly forgive, we must first remember. We must tell the truth to ourselves about the pain and the injury that has been inflicted on us. And we may want to tell the truth to the perpetrator as well, if it is safe to do so. If we are the offenders, it is a great help if we acknowledge to whomever we have hurt and to ourselves that we have done something we believe was wrong. We need to apologize and ask for forgiveness, as in the story today. It sounds so simple, yet we sometimes find it particularly hard to drop our pride and admit doing wrong. And harder still, to apologize and ask humbly to be forgiven. Another important step in the process of true forgiveness involves allowing time when it's needed. Time for the one who is hurt to experience the pain, time to grieve, time to allow the process of healing to take place, and perhaps time for the offender to make amends or change the behavior that has caused the pain. It is certainly possible to forgive another person, even if that person does not admit to wrongdoing or won't change the hurtful behavior. But in an ongoing relationship, when the offender admits to causing pain and asks for being to be forgiven, then the healing is much, much easier. As psychologist and expert on sexual abuse, Marie Forshin puts it, reconciliation happens when forgiveness and repentance meet. Once you have forgiven someone, do you then try to forget the wrong? Can you forget? The psychologist Thomas Saz once said, "The stupid neither forgive nor forget. The naive forgive and forget. The wise forgive, but do not forget." The wise remember because they do not naively deny the reality of this dark side of human nature. And they also have no wish to be martyrs by allowing hurtful behavior to be repeated over and over again. So they remember and they forgive because they know that forgiveness breaks through the cycle of conflict and pain and opens up new possibilities for healing and wholeness. Forgiveness does not imply that the offender is off the hook of responsibility. He or she should still be held accountable. But even if the offender won't make amends, even if the relationship ends, forgiveness is possible. Forgiveness stretches out its hand in peace and does not require punishment or restitution or an even score. In the New Testament, when Peter asks Jesus, "How often must I forgive my brother if he wrongs me? As often as seven times?" Jesus answers, "Not seven, I tell you, but 70 times seven." To truly forgive, we need to let go of the balance sheet. It is often not easy, and it is not always possible. An old hurt can be forgiven even without the perpetrator's help, even if the perpetrator is long gone from our lives. But then, why bother if the offender is gone? It may be worth the effort because forgiveness may do as much or more for the one who is forgiving as it does for the one who is forgiven. When you forgive, you lift that burden of pain and anger from your own shoulders. You cease to wallow in helpless victimhood, and you refuse to let the injury dominate the rest of your life. I've spoken about being open to forgiving someone and about being forgiven by someone, but sometimes the person we may have the most difficulty forgiving is ourselves. When we fall short of our own aspirations and expectations, when we make promises to ourselves that we fail to keep, it may be especially hard to let these personal shortcomings go. The wisdom embedded in the high holy days of Judaism is that all three forms of forgiveness are addressed: asking for forgiveness from others, forgiving others, and forgiving ourselves. Through fasting and meditation and through the words of prayers, songs, and chants. People search their souls. They ask for forgiveness of those they have hurt. They grant forgiveness to those who have hurt them. And they release themselves from unfulfilled vows they may have made concerning their own behavior. And they open themselves to the gift of forgiveness from their God. Louis Smedes has said that if there is an ought of forgiveness, it is not an ought of obligation, but an ought of opportunity. We can't force it. Even prayer and ritual can't make it happen. But we need to be open to the opportunity. And these high holy days are one tradition's reminder of the need to try to keep our hearts and our minds open to this gift of forgiveness. I believe that our forgiving is not entirely due to the efforts of our own will. After days or months or years of consciously or unconsciously working through the pain of an injury, forgiveness may seem to just come of its own accord and in its own time. A close friend of mine who experienced the intense pain of a relationship breakup some years back and who was beset for many months by anger, guilt, and dreams of revenge, described to me how she woke up one morning and realized that she had just somehow finally forgiven the man who left her and the one he left her for. Had she chosen to just nurse the grudge and hang on to the anger, and we often do this, don't we, because sometimes anger feels so righteous and so powerful. But had she held on to it, she may not have been open to the liberation that forgiveness brings. Recently, I spent times with somebody in my own life who I had felt hurt by years ago. As we were chatting, I became aware that slowly over the years, I had truly forgiven him. Just being aware of how forgiveness worked its magic on our relationship, I felt a lightness and a buoyancy, an almost physical feeling, like taking off a heavy backpack that you've been carrying around all day. It doesn't always happen in this way, and sometimes we can only forgive partially, and sometimes it doesn't happen at all. But when it does happen, and it often does, the experience of forgiveness has something of the bright and healing quality of a miracle. In the words of Louis Smedes, with which I close, no one could suspect in the nature of things, in the natural cause and effect of things, that anyone should ever forgive. We perform a miracle that hardly anyone notices. When we forgive, we come as close as any human being can to the essentially divine act of creation. For we create a new beginning out of past pain that never had a right to exist in the first place. We create healing for the future by changing a past that had no possibility in it for anything but sickness and death. When we forgive, we ride the crest of love's cosmic wave, and we heal the hurt we never deserved.